Morning.
Morning,
I've been away. I've been in Colombia. And so I got home late on Friday night after going to a Colombian party Thursday night. So it's a beautiful culture. Everybody's always kissing and hugging each other, which is fun. So I got to bed late Thursday night, then had to get up really early on Monday and then fly late at night. So I didn't really have time to prepare a talk, and it was going to be my intention to just sit an extra period, which isn't bad. And on my way to the Zendo this morning, something just popped into my head. So let me give you a little bit of the background of how I got there on Saturday morning, also having to get up early. This happened to be my Saturday at the prison. And I don't know how many of you know, but there's the Heart Circle Sangha and here. And Heart Circle Sangha has Joan Hobrick and Mark and Linda Strauss and myself. And we take turns on a rotating basis of going to Avenel State Prison to sort of run a meditation group. But there's a little bit more to it than just sitting. You know, we have some topic that we discuss. And I've been doing this for a while, but somehow when I'm sitting there, I was thinking, you know, one of the guys mentioned that he's going to be in for 10 years. And it's really hard to wrap my mind around 10 years. Think about it. You had to stay in this room for 10 years, 10 years of your life. And most of these guys are not that old. They're probably in their 30s or 40s. So it struck me how lonely it must be to be away from your family, friends, and whatever your life was before that. And, you know, I suppose that, you know, and I suppose they do make contacts and friends in the prison, but it's a rough life. It's not really a life that's conducive to closeness. So that sort of planted the seed. There was just some sense of loneliness. And then last night, is everybody familiar with Krishnadas? Well, you know, a beautiful chanter. And so I watched a biography last night on HBO called The One-Tracked Heart, and it's about Krishnadas. And really, all I knew about him was his chanting, which I love. And so if I can see how well I can remember this, but it starts off sort of classically the way a documentary does, with pictures of childhood. He was a kid, and it's sort of fun. You always, you know what he looks like now, but to see how somebody looked like when they were a kid. And then there's a picture of him, and it was just so out of place because of the relation to the way I see him. There's a picture of him. He plays for Stony Brook College, of going up for a rebound. He's a basketball player too. So it's interspersed with interviews with him and people like Ram Dass and other spiritual superstars from the 60s. And so he's basically talking about this, and he's talking about the first time he tripped on acid with a friend of his, and they were up all night, and he had a basketball game the next day, and he talks about this experience of still being, you know, still sort of semi-tripping and playing basketball, but that's sort of the lead-in to where his life went. And he was a musician. He played in a band, and one of the bands ultimately became Blue Oyster Cult. Any of you are familiar with that time period? It was, you know, just in the well-named bands of the time. And then he left the band, but apparently he was always, off and on, very depressed. So he got involved in the drug scene, and then, similar to Ram Dass, went to India and met, I think his name is Karim Karoli Baba, who was a famous guru back in those days. And the essence from, you know, the testimony of people that have spent time with him was that he was pure love, that people had never experienced love like this, just totally unconditional love. And so he made a very deep connection with his teacher. So time passes and the guru is in India and he's making plans to go and see him because he had come back to the States. And it's a long story how he got into chanting, which I won't tell, but so he started doing this. And while he was in the U.S. planning to go there, his teacher died. And you could imagine the kind of attachment that he had to someone who provided unconditional love, to somebody who, I don't know the details of his psychological life, but who had suffered depression, etc. So he suffered this profound loss. But the last time that he had seen his teacher when he was leaving to come back to the States. His teacher said, when you get back to the States, I want you to sing for me. And that was sort of the introduction into chanting. But there was something about the story, which is really, again, the issue of loneliness came up. Since I did this, actually, I decided to do this on the way here. I quickly ran into the library and Googled loneliness and spirituality. And one of the things, I don't even remember, I don't recall the guy's name, but talked about loneliness of being on the path without anybody that really understands what you're going through. And so that, in a way, the Sangha provides that sort of connection. And I think helps all of us deal with the sense of loneliness. We're more, like you're talking about, functioning together as one body doing this, as opposed to we leave here and just go off by yourself. And that's one of the functions in the three jewels of the Sangha, is the support. So before I go any further, does anybody want to share a little bit of relation to your spiritual practice, if loneliness ever came up for you?
Your prudence, why don't you come out to play? That's the Beatles referring to...
Just say it again, because I didn't...
Dear prudence, why don't you come out to play?
Oh, okay.
It's referring to a friend of theirs who went into the ashram, and they urged her to come out and get back into the light. I don't envy these people who cut themselves off, and the person who immediately comes to mind, who really... And they didn't make the point in the movie, who was an extremely lonely person, despite all of his talents, was Don Shirley, the great piano player, who not only was gay, but he was black and he wasn't accepted by anybody. The point that they made at the end of the movie there, and I wish they made it more, is that Shirley came alive and lost his loneliness and found a great presence in life by being around other people in two different situations. One, of course, in, I presume you've all seen the movie, Green Book. One was in the bar, where he's listening to music all night long with other African-Americans. And the second one was good Christmas dinner with his friends. And at that moment, his barriers and his openness to other people, loneliness is a barrier, but it can be, it's a porous barrier. And to resist it all the time, by cutting yourself off, is a Herculean attempt, and I'm not sure what the accomplishment is at the end. Mm-hmm. If Mr. Shirley came in to talk to me at the end, I would have said, get back in that bar, go listen to that music and have dinner with your friends every night, and you'll think about it, and it'll all assimilate, but you're going on the right path.
So let me read something by Thich Nhat Hanh. His words were, once we are home, we no longer feel lonely. And that's sort of the way when, I don't know, because of the prison, because where I was in Colombia, and just, I started thinking about my life and what drew me into spiritual practice. And it was looking for a way home. You know, I grew up, I always had some good friends, and in this, that sense, like we're talking about, I didn't feel lonely. I felt lonely in the sense that in my own family, which is a whole other story. So I did feel lonely in that sense. That's probably related to this. And what I realized is what's a source of loneliness that for most of us is, that we don't even know about it, is our basic lack of connection. You know, we function in the world as, you know, this is the heart of Zen, right? There's also a oneness underneath this. And that's what I think Thich Nhat Hanh is talking about, finding our way home. And so I thought I was so smart. I said, well, this is spiritual loneliness. And so when I Googled it, there was all sorts of stuff about spiritual loneliness. So it wasn't particularly original, but I really think it's true. I mean, I could feel that in my body, that sense of loneliness. It was a fundamental lack of connection to my life, to the world around me. And as I entered this kind of practice over time, I found that my relationships, you know, the more I felt connected to the world, to the universe, however we say that, I was more connected to the people in my life, you know, but I experienced it in a different way than I had ever experienced before. So, I mean, the kind of lonelinesses that we're talking about are profound. And I think maybe one of the antidotes for that is the practice that we do, where in a very different, subtle way, intuitive way, we're all connected underneath all of the different things that we're talking about. And for me, that realization, which I never really saw like I'm talking about it now, it just felt like the deeper I went in my practice, the more relaxed my body was, the more happy I was in my life, the more I was able to be compassionate and, you know, that, all that. And I think that's because the practice heals this fundamental aloneness that we feel that for most of us is out of our awareness. Well, thanks for listening.
You're welcome.
I love you guys.
I love you too.